The Sedra begins with Imbechu Kosei Teilechu. If you basically fulfill what the Torah says with certain conditions, then the Torah paints a tremendous picture of what will be in this world as your reward. You have your rains in the proper time, and the crops will be successful, and so on and so on and so on. So the obvious question is, I think it's an obvious question, that the reward for the Torah is not in this world. Schar mitzvah b'hayal malekah. The reward for mitzvahs is in the next world. Here it seems to imply that if you keep the Torah properly, you'll get rewarded in this world. So there are various answers to the question. One is that which it says, that schar mitzvah b'hayal malekah, applies to individuals. An individual, the reward for mitzvahs is not in this world, it's in the next world, and this is not talking about individuals. This is talking about when most of the Jewish people will keep the Torah properly, then there is a promise for the nation as a nation to be able to have all these good things. For individuals, the reward's in the next world. But Klal Yisrael is a klal. There's something that Jewish people as a people have something to offer this world. And therefore, the success of Klal Yisrael as a klal depends also on keeping the Torah even in this world. That's one possibility. The Rambam says a different idea. The Rambam says that this is not the reward for mitzvahs. It's not a reward. But it's a different idea completely. And that is that when a person keeps the mitzvahs, and we'll see the Rambam says a little bit more than that, but let's say it the way that people normally learn it. When people keep the mitzvahs, then in addition to the reward, which is for the next world, there is also a side benefit, that if you keep the mitzvahs properly, the Ribbono Shel Olam will give you circumstances where it'll be conducive to keep more mitzvahs. It's a perk. It's not a reward, right? And the opposite is true. If you don't keep the mitzvahs, right, then the Ribbono Shel Olam will give you circumstances where it'll be difficult to keep mitzvahs. If you don't want them, then I'm not going to make it easy for you either. The Rambam really says a little bit different than that. That's how everybody quotes this Rambam, that what the Torah speaks about, the material benefits that the Torah promises, are not rewards for the mitzvah itself, but it is that if you keep the mitzvahs properly, the Ribbono Shel Olam will give you ideal circumstances so you'll be able to keep more mitzvahs. And the most ideal circumstances, you Moshe Mashiach, where the circumstances will be the most ideal, that we'll be able to keep the mitzvahs in the most ideal way. That's the purpose of Yemos HaMashiach. That's the ultimate scenario, environment in this world for keeping mitzvahs. The ideal environment. The Rambam really adds another dimension. He says that if a person keeps the mitzvahs b'simcha, and he does them with joy, right, and we'll add also that he puts his effort into it. He does them properly with a lot of effort, because that's what it says in this week's Sedra. In the Chukosei Teilechu Shiyu Amelim Batorah. It's not good enough just to do it, but to do it with a tremendous amount of effort. Put in all your thought and energy, and you'll do it b'simcha, because we've explained in the past it's something that you are happy, something you're happy about, you're willing to put effort into. And the opposite is also true. Something that you put a lot of effort into, you're happy about doing because you feel accomplishment. So simcha and effort go together. Things that come easy, a person doesn't really appreciate and is not that happy about. And the things that people aren't happy about, they're not willing to put their energy into. So those two things go together. So when you do the mitzvahs in that way, then the reward will be, and some learn, that, again, the reward is not for the mitzvah. A mitzvah is a spiritual thing. You can't get physical reward for a spiritual thing. There's no place in this world where the reward for a mitzvah could be effective. But for doing it with simcha, and with the effort, for the simcha and the effort, you can be rewarded in this world. Not for the mitzvah itself. The essence of the mitzvah itself, the reward's in the next world. But for the happiness that you did it with, for the effort that you put in, for that you get rewarded in this world. Now, the truth is that what the Rambam's saying is a combination of both. One, that the Rabbanu Shem gives you the circumstances to make it conducive to do mitzvahs, and also it depends on the how much simcha and how much effort you put into it.
Okay.
But it's not two separate ideas. Let me explain to you how they go together. The quote of Mishnah that we explained more than once, but I'm going to say it again because it has a lot of relevance to what I'm going to tell you. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Kachi Darka Shel Torah. Do you want to know if you're on the path of Torah or not? Here is the way to determine if you're on the path of Torah. Pasva Melech Tocha, all you should eat is bread and salt. Mayim B'mesura Tishte, only drink measured out water. Ala Oretz Tishon, sleep on the floor, don't sleep in a bed. V'chayitzar Tichya, and live a life of privation. U'v'Torah Ata Omel, and if you put still tremendous effort into Torah, Im Ata Osekein, if you do that, Ashrecha V'Tovla, then you'll be fortunate and it'll be good for you. Ashrecha Bola Mazel, you're fortunate in this world, it's good for you in the next world. That's the mission. Now, to understand that mission literally is impossible, because it would seem to imply that anybody who eats more than bread and salt, drinks more than water, and sleeps in a bed is not the Derech HaTorah. Right? And that doesn't seem to be what's necessary, because there are plenty of Gedolei Yisrael who slept in beds. Right? And they ate more than bread and salt. So you'd have to say they weren't the Derech HaTorah. In fact, I don't know anybody who didn't sleep in a bed, except for an old aunt I had who had back trouble. She used to sleep on the floor, so she probably was the only person I ever knew was B'derech HaTorah. What does that mean? So what I think it means is the following. And I saw that there are Rishonim who explain it, similar to what I'm going to tell you. The Mishnah says like this. You want to know if you're on the path of Torah or not. If Torah is the main thing in your life or not, here's the test. You could eat steaks, and you could drink champagne, and you can sleep on a Sealy mattress. But what would be if you wouldn't have those things, but you'd be able to still put effort into Torah and to learn Torah? How would you feel? If under those circumstances you'd feel miserable, then obviously the Torah is not the main thing in your life. That's not what gives you happiness and makes you feel fortunate, but the steaks and the bed and the champagne makes you feel fortunate. And therefore, if you're missing those things, you feel that you are very unfortunate, even though you have Torah and mitzvahs. So what is the thing in life that's important to you, that gives meaning to your life? All those other things, not the Torah. Then you're not the Derech HaTorah. But if a situation would arise where you'd have to eat only bread and salt, and you'd have to drink only water, and you'd have to sleep on the floor, but you could still be involved in Torah, and imata osakein, if doing that you'd feel ashrecha v'tovla, you're still fortunate, then ashrecha bolam azevetovla. If you could still feel fortunate, because what really makes you happy and gives you a feeling of fortune is Torah and mitzvahs, not those other things, then if you're missing those other things, you may feel uncomfortable, but you won't feel that you're totally an umlal, a miskein, right? You'll feel that you're still fortunate, because you still are able to be in this world and do what this world's all about. You're still able to learn Torah and fulfill mitzvahs. That's what really makes you feel fortunate. The other things are enhancements of that, but they're not the main thing in your life. But if you would have Torah and not have those things and feel miserable, then obviously the Torah is not the main thing in your life. They are. Then you're not the Derech HaTorah. That's what it means. And because of that, the difference is, practically, if those things are the main thing in your life. In other words, Gashmias can be an important part of your life. It enhances your life, makes you feel more comfortable, right? It makes you more eager to do mitzvahs. But if that, which is the main thing of your life, right? What is it that is the most important to you? The physical, material things, or the fact that you're able to do mitzvahs and learn Torah in this world and fulfill what the real purpose of this world is, to create the world to come. Because no matter how much comforts and how much material things you have, it's not going to last forever. This world is a very limited place. So if you do mitzvahs and learn Torah, you're creating something eternal. If you only look at the temporal things, then they go away eventually. So the purpose of this world is to take all those temporal material things and change them into something eternal by using them the proper way with Torah and mitzvahs. So if the main thing is the Torah and mitzvahs, and those things are enhancement, then the difference will be what happens when there's a conflict. There doesn't have to be a conflict. You can synchronize your material, physical life and your spiritual life perfectly, and the two will complement and supplement each other. But sometimes there's a conflict, and you have to make a decision. Right? If I do X, my material, physical situation will be enhanced, but it will be at the sacrifice of something spiritual. If I do Y, my spiritual situation will be enhanced, but it will be at the sacrifice of my physical material. Right? First, has to decide where he's going to live. Okay? And he can live in a place where it's a very bad influence spiritually, but the Gashmius is great, right? Everything will be very, or he can choose to live in a place that the Gashmius is not that great, but spiritually it's a much better influence. So he has to make a choice, right? And there's a conflict. Do I choose the Gashmius over the Ruchnius or the Ruchnius over the Gashmius? It's never black and white like that, because how your Gashmius affects your Ruchnius too, right? If you live in a place where you're going to be miserable, then it may be a great place of Ruchnius, but you're not going to benefit from it. And the opposite is also true. So it's never really black and white, but there are situations in life where you have to make a decision. And the decision is based on what is the main thing for me. Is the main thing for me my spiritual situation or my physical material situation? If one of them has to be sacrificed to the other, if one has to be has to fall away and in the face of the other, which is the one that falls away and which is the one you sacrifice for the sake of the other? Do you sacrifice the spiritual for the sake of the physical? Then obviously the physical is the more important thing to you. If you sacrifice the physical for the sake of the spiritual, obviously the spiritual is more important to you. So that's what that Mishnah means. That's the case. The following is the case. If a person does mitzvahs lackadaisically, this is not really what makes me happy in this world, but I got to do it, you know, I'm a firm person, I believe in all of this, I'll do it, but, you know, this isn't my joy in life. This isn't what makes me feel fortunate. What makes me feel fortunate is having more money, eating nicely, living in a nice house. That's what really makes me feel fortunate in this world. And the other thing is, I do it. It's for sure part of my life. I do it, but I do it, you know, lackadaisically. Then if the Rabbanu Shem is going to give you more material things, it could be that it won't be to your benefit, because those material things will be a conflict to your spiritual things. Because those material things will just give you an appetite for more and more, and you'll be pursuing those things at the expense of spiritual things. So for a person like that, it's not a reward to have a good physical material situation. Just the opposite. For a person like that, sometimes it's better to have dire situation, because in dire situations, people become more frum. So for that person, what's good for his spiritual well-being is not to have those physical material things. Just the opposite. And that's the whole idea of Golus. When Klal Yisrael live in Eretz Yisrael, and they don't take advantage of it, but they look at the material benefits of Eretz Yisrael as something, as an intrinsic value to itself, and not as something, as an aid to enhance their spiritual life, because they give up their spiritual life, and they concentrate only on the material things. Then the Rebbe Shlomo Zalman, take those material things away, put you in Golus, and then those things won't mean so much to you. Then you'll start realizing that the spiritual things that you don't have anymore, that's what really means something to you. So sometimes putting a person into a situation where things aren't good, wakes them up and makes them realize what really is important in life. And when things are good...
Because there are a lot of Israelis who have never gone to a shul in Israel. They go to Kutzlaritz, they gather, and I remember in the Philippines and in Thailand, I saw this several times, where the Israelis who had no connection with Yiddishkeit suddenly feel they have to join a shul.
Yeah,
right.
They don't always become hooked from, but they feel the need to...
Or they send their children to from school, right, 100%. So, that's what it says in the end of the Sedra. The Afgam Zos, when I send you into Golis and I put you in the land of your enemies, it's not because I hate you. Lo ma'astim, I'm not disgusted with you. Lo ga'altim, ga'altim means that I push you off, right? L'chala, I don't want to destroy you. I don't want to abrogate my covenant with you. Just the opposite. It's all for the sake of bringing you back. Because if you continue on the way that you were, you'd be lost. This way, it's a wake-up call. And that's what sometimes happens to people who have lost their way and concentrate on the wrong things. When those things are taken away, you begin to realize that can't be the main thing of my life. On the other hand, somebody who serves the Rebbe with tremendous simcha and a lot of effort, that means that the main thing in my life is a spiritual. I'm willing to put effort, and that's what really gives me joy. Then God says, there's no danger of me giving you material, physical things, because since the main joy in your life and what you're willing to put effort in is spiritual, these things will only enhance it. And if it'll be a conflict, then you'll sacrifice those things. Because the main simcha in your life, obviously, is keeping mitzvahs, because you do it to simcha. So therefore the Rambam says, in such a situation, God will give you all the material, physical benefits of this world, not as a reward, but as an environment where it'll be more conducive to you to keep more mitzvahs. But that's conditional on how you look at mitzvahs. If you look at mitzvahs as something that is a drag, not the main thing in your life, then those material things will be a conflict to your mitzvahs. But if you look at mitzvahs as the main simcha in your life, and the material, physical things can only be an aid, but if they are in conflict, you'll sacrifice them, then giving you these things is a positive thing. Because it can only aid your spiritual life. Then it's a reward. It's not a reward, it is conducive to keeping mitzvahs. But it's very possible to get good material things, and it won't be conducive for you to keep mitzvahs. It'll just the opposite. It'll pull you away from mitzvahs. God's not going to do that. So therefore, when the mitzvahs are the main thing in your life, and you do them with joy, and you put effort into them, then God says, I want to give you an ideal situation to keep mitzvahs. I want to give you all the material good, so you won't have to worry about parnasa or whatever, and you'll use it all for the right purpose. When that's not the case, then the ideal situation for you sometimes is the opposite. To not have the material, physical good, to be in gullus, to have tzaris, and unfortunately, when people have tzaris and they're in bad situations, then, you know, they turn to God. There's no atheist in a foxhole. When the bullets are flying overhead, all of a sudden everybody gets frum and looks for the Rebbe Shalom. There are exceptions, but for the most part, that's the way things are. Yeah, yeah.
There are an awful lot of mitzvahs to keep. So what, you know, I think maybe sometimes we approach some of them with joy, and some of them are more difficult. And we feel like, I mean, I know it's a good thing if you do it anyway, right? Then that's a really good thing if you do it anyway.
Right.
But how do you approach all of them with joy?
Okay. The thing is like this. That, first of all, that's what's normal. Okay, that's human. What's it called? What's even more human is that some people keep some mitzvahs and don't keep other mitzvahs, not necessarily because they don't believe in them, because their situation is it's difficult. That's the reality of most of us, right? Speak for myself, that are not tzaddikim gemurim and are working on doing what's right, and sometimes you do what's wrong or don't do what's right. And even a higher level than that is, we do everything, but some things we do with a lot of interest, and some things just because we have to. But that's not the ideal. The ideal would be to do Ratzon Hashem, put effort into everything, and to do everything b'simcha. Again, that's a lifelong quest to be able to do it. But the main difference is, what's your attitude towards Torah and mitzvahs? If you have a piecemeal attitude towards Torah and mitzvahs, in other words, I'm doing this mitzvah because this mitzvah is important, or that mitzvah is important, and this mitzvah is not that important to me, so then it's possible that certain mitzvahs you'll do with relish and gusto, and certain mitzvahs you'll do lackadaisically, and certain you'll do, what's it called, almost against your will, or not do them at all. But if your attitude is not piecemeal, but you have this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you really feel close to God, and you really feel that you want to serve Him, and then all the mitzvahs are just hechitimtzes, they're just ways of fulfilling that, but your main goal in life is to be an Eved Hashem, then it's a different story. Then it doesn't make a difference what it is that you're doing, because the main motivation is you want to get closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You want to, right? So if your focus is on God, not on mitzvahs, right? And the mitzvahs are only a way of getting closer to God, then you can be happy about all of them. But if you don't have that final thing, you're holding now by just, which is fine. But then there can be a difference between this mitzvah or that mitzvah, whatever. That's why it says, V'hoya Ekev Tishmu. If you keep the mitzvahs that most people tread underfoot, they don't consider them important because they have a mitzvah-oriented existence, but not a God-oriented existence. But in a God-oriented existence, there's no mitzvahs that are important or not important. They're all the same thing. That's the idea. Okay. Okay, let's speak a little bit about Lag BaOmer. Tell you something interesting. This has nothing to do with me. It's a marsha, a very interesting marsha of what the significance of Lag BaOmer is. Why the 33rd day in the Omer is significant. The Gemara says in Moikotin that if a person lives out most of his life without sinning, okay, then he can be assured that he'll continue and live off the rest of his life without sinning. Unless he decides he wants to sin. But, you know, if he's made it this way, it's easy coasting, you know, the rest of the way. Now, what would you say is called most of your life? What age? No, so some people would say 61, right? 120, that's a life. Some would say, it says in the Pasuk, right? Yumechayenu shivim shana. 70 years is a Torah lifespan. And so 36 years is most of your life. What does the Gemara say? 52 years. 52 years is called you live most of your life. And who lived the life of 52 years? Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi lived 52 years.
Shmuel
52? Okay, I'm not familiar with it, but Shmuel HaNavi, Pasuk says he lived 52 years. So the Marsha says, what in the world does 52 years have to do with most of your life? It would have to be that a Torah lifespan is 103 years, and living 52 years is most of your life. Where in the world is 103 come into anything? How does 52 become most of your life? Says the Marsha like this. The Torah lifespan, right, average lifespan is 70 years. Right? Baruch Hashem, people can live longer than that, but 70 years of Torah lifespan. In Bigvuros, Shmonim Shana was 80 years, Bigvuros, and then it could be even more than that. But 70 years is like the average Torah lifespan. Out of that, says the Marsha, the first 20 years don't count. Okay, till you're 20, you're not really held responsible, you're not really a full adult. Okay, 20. So you have how many years left? 50 out of the 70. So that's like the 49 years of Shemitah, and the 50th year is the Yovel. Everything follows that pattern of 49 and then the 50th. So your life really has 50 meaningful years from the time that you're 21 and on. Now, if you take the years from 21 to 50, you're left with 49 years. Okay? And the 50th year already is you graduate out of this world.
21 to 70,
right. So you're left with 49 years. If you divide that into three parts, the majority, he says, is not a simple majority, but a two-thirds majority. So if you divide it into three parts, each part is 16 and a fraction. When do you reach two-thirds, right, after what's it called, 32 goes away and you come to the 33rd year? What is that after 52 years? Because you add the 32 to the original 20, and you're 52, you've gone through two-thirds of your significant life, which starts at 21. That's how you get to 52.
Why two-thirds?
Well, that's what he says, a majority. Majority, you can have a majority, a simple majority. You can have a two-thirds majority. For this, you need a two-thirds majority. He says, if that's the case, then we can apply the same thing to Sphiris Omer. He says that the world, according to Rabbi Yoshua, was created in Nisan. But it doesn't mean the world was created in Nisan. It means man was created on the first day of Nisan. Just like when we say that the world was created in Tishrei, it means that on Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Tishrei, man was created. The world was created 6 days earlier. So if the world was created in Nisan, that means really it was created on the 25th day of Adar. 6 days earlier. From the 25th day of Adar till the 15th day of Nisan, which is the day we left Egypt, is 20 days. Those 20 days don't count. Because those are all like, till the birth of the Jewish people, the significant birth was 15th day of Nisan, which is 20 days from the beginning of the creation of Nisan. From that point on, we start counting. 49, and make the 50th special, just like the 49 years and the 50th. When is the turning point? When you know that you're really established and the rest is easy sailing, two-thirds of that point. What day is that? The 33rd? 33rd day of the counting is the two-thirds point. That's the day that what's it called that's special. That's why Lag BaOmer says it's special. And that's why the students of Yekiva stopped dying, because the lesson they were supposed to learn, they learned by that time. That's when the lesson kicked in on, after 33 days or whatever. He doesn't say that, but I'm saying that's the significance of Lag BaOmer. Okay, one more thing. we spoke about this idea in a different context. I may mention the different context that we spoke about, but I want to put it into this context. Torah says the following. Part of the Tochacha is that God says, I'm going to send an enemy against you, and you're going to retreat into your walled cities to protect yourself from the enemy. Then I'm going to send a plague in the city, and because of that, you're going to be given into the hands of your enemies. So Rashi explains, how does it work out? He says, it happens like this. An enemy is going to come and attack us. So we're all going to retreat into Yerushalayim, which is the main walled city, and we're going to be holed up in Yerushalayim, and the enemy's not going to be able to get us, because we're behind the walls. Then God's going to send a plague, and people are going to die. Now the halacha is, you're not allowed to bury, you're not allowed to leave a dead body in Yerushalayim overnight. You have to take them out of the walls of the city, and that's why Harazesim is outside the walls. Only Malchei Beis David, the Davidic kings, were allowed to be buried within the walls. That's why the tomb of David HaMelech supposedly is there, whatever. But otherwise, you can't bury anybody within the walls of Yerushalayim. You can't even leave a dead body overnight, and that's why in Yerushalayim, the Chevra Kedisha never postpones a Levaya, right? They always do it immediately. They don't wait for relatives to come, whatever. And if they do, they take the body out of Yerushalayim and bring it back. So it's not left in Yerushalayim. Okay. So what's going to happen? You're going to have dead bodies. You're not going to be able to leave them in the city. You have to take them out to bury them. So they're going to take them out of the city. And then when they leave the walls of the city, they're going to be delivered into the hands of the enemies. Now they're going to be vulnerable to the enemies. That's the Tochach. What's going on over here? First of all, halachically, right? They came to ask a Shiloh. We have a few dead bodies. We know that you're not allowed to leave a dead body in Yerushalayim overnight. Should we take them outside the walls? What would be the halacha? No. Pikuach nefesh. There's an enemy out there. It's life endangering to walk outside the walls. So this isn't, and first of all, could be that halacha is only derabbanan. It's only rabbinic halacha that you can't leave a dead body in Yerushalayim. Even if it's in the Torah, it doesn't supersede danger to life. You're Mechal Shabbos. Surely you can bury a dead body in Yerushalayim or leave him overnight. and not go out and be exposed to the enemy. You can bury him in the Beis HaMikdash, under the Aron, if it's necessary to save lives. Beyond that, right, who are we talking about? We're talking about people who deserve all this tolchacha. The Ramban says, talking about the people of the first Beis HaMikdash, the structure of the first Beis HaMikdash. These people were Megale Arayas, Shofchei Damim, Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Right? They did the worst sins. They were idolaters, adulterers, and murderers. They're going to be so frum that they're not going to leave a body in Yerushalayim and put their lives in danger? The answer is yes. That's the tochach. Sometimes people can make an Avodah Zarah out of certain things and it has nothing to do with the Torah anymore. The Torah says you bury that body in Yerushalayim. But if Yerushalayim, and that's what happened, the Beis HaMikdash became an Avodah Zarah. Right, the Yerushalayim became an Avodah Zarah. The Beis HaMikdash, it says, the Avod and the Beis HaMikdash, they mamash treated it like an Avodah Zarah. How so? It says that they used to have races up the Kadesh to decide which Kohen would get the Avodah. So one time they were racing, and two young Kohanim were neck and neck, and one of them said, the other guy's going to get ahead of me, and he's going to make the sacrifice. I'm not going to be able to make the sacrifices. So he took out a knife and stabbed the other guy in his heart. Right? I mean, this is, you know, we're talking about frumkai, we're talking about, you know, making a sacrifice. This is, you know, what does murder have to do with that? So, and the guy fell off the ramp, and he was dying. His father, the father of the victim, came, pulled out the knife from his son's heart, and he said, don't worry, I got the knife out before he died. The knife is still tar. Didn't become tummy. That means they were more concerned about the knife being tummy or tar than the life of his kid, his own kid. So that means they made an idolatry out of the Beis HaMikdash, out of the Avodah, and they lost sight of what it was all about. So anything can become an Avodah Zarah. Remember, I told you a story about a balabos I had with Yom Kippur, right, who said that no matter what, he's going to fast on Yom Kippur, even the halacha is that he has to eat. So I told him, you're an idol worshiper. You've made an idol out of Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur said you have to fast. God said you have to eat. But you don't care about God. You care about your Yom Kippur God. So same thing over here. They made Yerushalayim into an Avodah Zarah. And for Yerushalayim, we don't bury people in Yerushalayim, even if it's we have to risk our lives. That's not Torah. That's part of what the Tochach is all about. When Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash, Eretz Yisrael, anything becomes a value to itself, then it becomes an Avodah Zarah. So that's something to think about, right? Anything, whether how holy it is, if you give it intrinsic value and don't see it as part of the whole Torah, then big problem. Okay.
Regarding one of the comments you made, I'd like to say it out loud.
Yeah.
I heard from Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg. He was at the Moed Tzedolia Torah with the Shver and Gruderman.